Matthew 7, verses 21 to 23 read, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" Hello and welcome back to Think This Way. This is the podcast of Faith Bible Church. As always, I'm your host, Pastor Bryce. And today I have with me another elder of Faith Bible. It is Bob Walther. Bob, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me, Bryce.
So today we're talking about evangelism because that's our quarterly focus. We're kind of getting toward the end of this quarterly focus. The next quarterly focus is going to be missions. So our quarterly focuses operate on a three-year rotation. In the first year, deals with foundational issues, God, the Bible, the gospel, and discipleship. The second year moves more into the Holy Spirit, his work in our life and personal holiness, family, things like this. And then the last year starts branching outward into good works, in our workplaces, benevolence, helping others, and then we have evangelism. And finally, the furthest branching out is missions. So that'll be next quarter. But as we move toward missions, it's important we have an emphasis just on evangelism because you can't really encourage elsewhere what you're not doing here. And we wanted to talk today about a kind of evangelism that I think is accessible for every person listening to this, and they may not even know that this is an opportunity they encounter every week to have relationships with those who are lost and share the gospel with them. I'm titling this episode Low-Hanging Fruit. And we are today talking about how to share the gospel with unbelievers in your local church. So if you're here at Faith Bible Church, we're talking about our friends here who attend who are not believers. And just to get started, there are a lot of testimonies that you hear, and it's someone saying, "I went to church for a long time, but I didn't really know Christ." Hear that all the time. That's actually my testimony as well. And we hear that and we're used to that in testimonies, but you have to bear in mind that means almost certainly that every Sunday when we come to church to worship, we have people all around us who are not believers yet. And they probably don't know that. Of course, they don't have a sign on their head telling us they're not believers. But that is an opportunity for us to be used in sharing the gospel with them, encouraging them toward a true relationship with Christ. So bearing that in mind. Now, that kind of leads us to an unusual balance that's necessary. On the one hand, we don't want to come to church as these kind of skeptics with our magnifying glass, looking around, distrusting anyone's profession of faith. We're not encouraging that. But on the other hand, the danger is that you just assume everyone's a believer because they have God talk. So I was wondering if you could help us with that, Bob. How do we balance that perspective of not being overly skeptical of people and thinking, you're not a believer, but on the other hand, keeping open that possibility that maybe those around us in church are not believers?
Yeah. Well, I remember a number of years ago reading something from R.C. Sproul, and I've read it from other sources since, that in one way of looking at people and the church is that there are four kinds of people: those who are saved and know they're saved, those who are not saved and know that they're not saved, and then there are those who are saved or who are becoming saved that don't have the assurance of that yet. And then the last group is those who aren't saved but think they are saved. And I think that's probably predominantly who we're talking about in this part of the conversation. People who probably come to church pretty regularly and maybe give the at least the outward appearance of being Christians but aren't. And we should be very thankful that they are inside our walls. We want them to be here. I think the discernment, and particularly on the part of the elders, is, and I think we do a pretty fair job of this here with our newcomers classes, where, you know, if you're going to attend here very long, you're strongly encouraged to be in that class. And whoever leads those classes gets a very, very good feel for the depth of belief of the people in that class. A lot of people don't attend that class and maybe attend here for years. And, you know, the thing that I think that is really forces in on the leadership in the church, we want those people here. We want them hearing the message of the good news of the gospel and just the good news of the Christian life after the gospel, and have them exposed to people that love them as unbelievers. They may not know they're unbelievers. They may think they're believers. But I think the caution in that is they cannot be allowed to ascend to some level of leadership or influence in the church, even to the point of becoming members, where they would have kind of a voting right in the life and livelihood of the church. So there is some pressure on the leadership to have discernment about those people. And it can be difficult. Most of the time it's pretty simple. You'll know they're Christians by their love. We'll know they're Christians by their fruit bearing. And that doesn't mean necessarily leading people to the Lord. It means by their obedience to Jesus Christ. And he says, if you love me, you'll obey everything I've commanded. These people casting out demons, obviously Jesus knew they had not done that. And I think typically it's pretty obvious after a period of time who believers are in your church. But those that aren't, it's certainly not our desire to uproot them. When Jesus talks about, as you pull up the tares, you pull up the wheat too. It does a lot of damage if you try to do that. And certainly a large part of the ministry of the church is to preach the gospel to people that come in here that are, they want to hear something, and we want to make sure we preach the truth.
That's a great point, too, about the role of the elders in that, especially when it comes to membership, because anyone who becomes a member here is interviewed with an elder. Recently, we've had it where they're interviewed with more than one elder.
Yes.
And that's not to be intimidating or anything. You know, fill out an application, meet with multiple elders. That is for this very purpose. We do want to get to know the person, but we especially want to kind of vet the testimony that they have with generosity. I think in my experience, sometimes you do have, especially in church discipline cases, someone who you really thought was a believer, and then maybe they show themselves not to be. But you are right. Usually you can kind of tell. Zeal for the Lord, sensitivity to sin, all these marks. I think there was one time that stands out in my mind. The person is not here at our church right now, but there's one time that stands out in my mind where I just wasn't sure. I was interviewing and reading the application. All the answers were right. And asked questions, the answers are mostly right. There was some fuzziness on the gospel, so I actually sent the person back, said, hey, here's some stuff to read. Let's have another meeting in a little while. Let's see if you're just struggling to articulate this. And met again, had the right answers because he read the materials. And I just felt like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see the great joy in Christ here, but I don't see any clear, blaring sin. And so that was probably the hardest case where I went, well, I'm going to give a generosity of judgment here. But besides that, we are pretty thoughtful in who we allow to become members here, you know, with generosity. But that is an important point. Yeah, because there are two kinds of people that we're really talking about usually. You know, if you have someone who's in the church, that fourth category Sproul gave, you're not a believer, but you don't know it. You think you are. It's usually two kinds of people there. One is, in a sense, the easier evangelistic opportunity. And I see this all the time. Just recently, there are more opportunities like this. Someone just shows up. Maybe they were invited. Maybe they found us through a website. And they either are under conviction or they just recently start attending, like just in the last few weeks, start attending under conviction, or a friend invited them. And so they're open and interested, but not believers yet. Those are great opportunities, you know, because sometimes there is even some awareness of, I'm not sure where I am spiritually. So then you can come into those opportunities, share with them. I think by far the harder example of this is when someone has been in the church for decades. And maybe even they got through and they are a member, and they've been a member for a long time. it's hard to even imagine they wouldn't be a believer because they've been there for such a long time. But we hear testimonies of people in that exact situation who actually come to Christ after. And I thought, just as we're talking about that, Bob, do you have any examples of a testimony like that? Someone who had not been a believer yet, but was in church, and then God awakened them to the fact they were not a believer.
Yes, I have several, actually. One in particular was a young man who attended church regularly, had a lot of nice suits, owned a business, had a nice family, and you know, the church actually pursued him to teach and even consider being an elder. And it turned out the guy, he thought he was saved, but something wouldn't let him say yes to those things. And later on, he found out that he wasn't saved, and he got saved, and that person was me. So I know what that feels like, and you're grinning, and because I think you know that person was you too, some extent.
Was,
you know, raised in a Christian family and all that. And everybody expected that of Bryce Beale. I in a church I attended once, and that particular church, I was just loved by people though that were believers that knew that I wasn't, and just persisted with me, and. I was difficult. I kept asking the hard questions. At least I thought they were hard. They were really one-on-one questions, but I just asked them over and over and over because I just couldn't understand grace. But the love of those people for me has ended up leading me to the Lord. It was amazing, but it was the love of believers. But I've known people in the church that were elders and taught Sunday school classes and gave the appearance of being saved and come to find out they were not. And they did a lot of damage. Led a lot of people astray with some saccharine version of the gospel that was not the gospel at all. And that's a scary thing. That can happen unless the elders are very discerning at that stage of granting membership and granting authorities in the church of teaching classes or anything where other people are coming under a strong level of their influence.
And sometimes that is used against the church as evidence that it's all fake, is that you even have leaders who are living a double life. But it is interesting for us that Judas was one of the 12 chosen by Jesus. I mean, Jesus didn't choose 11 Judases, so there should be some true believers there. But the fact that there was one. I do grin as you share that testimony, your own testimony, as an adult who's not a believer in a church but doesn't know it yet, in talking about the love, people just consistently loving you, which is probably the biggest takeaway from this podcast, is as you're trying to share with people in the church who you suspect may not be believers, consistently love them, you know, and see what God does. The one other thing I want to talk about, and this moves then more toward myself and my own testimony, because you're right, it's my testimony too. The one difference being that I came to Christ in high school, early high school, but had grown up in the church and in very good churches, had a very deep Bible knowledge. My mom was an excellent and committed Bible teacher. We were homeschooled for some time, and so I knew the Bible. So I was not just a Christian, but especially once I got into public schools, I was the Christian. People came to me with J.I. Packer's book, Knowing God. He talks about that at the beginning. You can get some Bible knowledge. People start coming to you, and it's kind of dangerous because you assume, well, if they think I am, then I am. So that's the difference, is I grew up and considered myself Christian. I had prayed a prayer when I was real young, but my life was just absolutely immersed in sin. But it was all secret sin, so it's not advertised. So it's all secret sin, but I was not a believer. And I do want to talk very briefly about that. As we're talking about unbelievers in the church, some of those are adults, but also we are talking about teenagers and children. You know, other traditions, Roman Catholicism, for example, they baptize children into the church. They think it washes away original sin. That's not true, but that's how they induct people into the church that way. Presbyterians and Lutherans, who don't believe it washes away original sin, thankfully, they also practice the baptism of children. Now, we don't agree with that. We are Baptist, lower, small case B there. We are Baptist. We believe you should believe and then be baptized according to the New Testament pattern. But that puts an impetus on us that we then have to work hard to think about the children and the teenagers in our midst. We don't have a sense that they're part of a covenant community in the same way a Presbyterian would. And so we have our children who are growing up, and we know they are not believers from the time of birth. And then we could talk about age of accountability, but at some point, they need to become believers. I think it's a very young age. They need to hear the gospel, believe the gospel. And so when we talk about unbelievers in the church, a good number of those are young people who are in my same situation. And since they've grown up in the church, most of them, unless they're in some kind of really clear open rebellion, probably assume they are believers. So here is my question for you, Bob, first of all, is just how should we be thinking about the salvation of the children here at Faith Bible Church?
Well, it is a very high level of need, and it's a high level of energy here at Faith Bible Church to make that happen. And I have seen what, in my opinion, are huge mistakes in that. There is something that has been going through the Christian church for 20 years or so now that, there was an issue of Table Talk years and years ago, and the front cover said, "Let us entertain you." And that is, in my opinion, particularly dangerous when it's done with children. And it is done in many churches where these Sunday school rooms are even formatted in, like knights of old and this and that and the other. And the Sunday school teachers dress up and make Sunday school kind of an entertaining thing for children. And, you know, what you use to kind of catch them, that's what you have to end up feeding them. And I mean, that's the same thing with entertainment-based worship services. You know, people start coming to be entertained rather than to worship a holy God. And it's just bad ministry. And I think it's so important to start at the early years with good ministry. Now, there are so many wonderful resources for age-appropriate teaching of children. Certainly, you're not going to have some three-year-olds in the nursery or even five-year-olds and sit down and start reading the King James Bible. You know, it's not going to root in with them. But there are so many good resources, and the resources we use here to teach children at that age where they're hearing the truth early on. And certainly then as they grow into maybe 10-year-olds or then middle school age kids in high school, then you move into more direct teaching of the Bible. I remember when Marianne and I first started coming here, I came from a church that did a lot of that entertainment kind of stuff for kids and even older kids. And we walk back through that Sunday school room, the Sunday school wing, and there's these very young kids back with their Bibles open, writing. And I looked at Marianne, I said, "This is good. This is good. We are training them early on. Does that guarantee they're going to be believers?" No, it didn't with Bryce Beal. Mm-hmm. But the truth is being planted in them. And I think that's the important challenge we have, is to make sure we are teaching them the truth as early as they are able to have any concept of it.
Yeah, that's excellently said. You know, when we move from the younger ages of children, then up into teenage, which is practically adult, but we'll just say teenage, because in our culture, at least, that's a separate age category, teenage. So in our church, the teenagers here, again, that similar situation. They've grown up, many of them have grown up in believing homes. Probably most of the teenagers here would say they are believers, if you asked them, just like I would have. Probably most of them would. Are they all? I'm not thinking of any in particular here when I say this. Just logically, it's unlikely in any place that that's the case. And my own story is testimony to that. Do you have any counsel for us as we're thinking about the low-hanging fruit of wanting to be used by God specifically to help the teenagers here at church come to know Christ personally, do you have any counsel for how we can be used by God in that way?
Well, first of all, I think that there is caution in trying to rush to judgment on both middle school age kids and high school age kids. That, you know, they attend church, they kind of hear the truth, or they don't kind of hear the truth, they hear the truth. And then they make this assumption that that's it. And so they have a friend who wants to get baptized. And it can almost become a fad or a bit of emotional contagion where all of a sudden you get 15 kids that are buddies that now they all want to get baptized. And once again, I think that falls on the responsibility of the elders to ascertain whether these young people are actually saved or not. And admittedly, that is not always a clear and easy thing to do. But I think that they are going to have to give the same evidence as an adult would, even if they're 12 years old. You know, we want to know if this is true or not before we baptize you. And because that could be leading them astray, even to encourage them to think that they're something that they're not. So I don't know if I've answered the question or raised more questions.
That's just the nature of the subject.
It really is. I mean,
yeah. I mean, just the other day, Caleb Peters in our small group was sharing how, and I don't remember what age he was at this point, but he said in his past, before he was a believer, he'd grown up in a Christian home, and he remembers a conversation he had with his uncle, and his uncle told him, "I don't think you're a believer." And that was the first time I think anyone had told him that. And we're not trying to go around, again, because it's hard to ascertain. You know, you're not trying to go around just telling, you're not a believer because you've got sin struggles. No. But we are trying to be wise about that.
And yes, and I think part of the wisdom in that is teaching them the seriousness of this thing you're saying. This is just not, you're not, this isn't like joining a fraternity. Yeah. This isn't like, you know, joining some social club. Yeah, you're in the chess club at North High School. This isn't that. This is certainly one of the most serious decisions and commitment you're making in your life. The only other one that would even come close to it's marriage. Yeah. Yeah. This is a very serious thing, and I think they need to be made aware of that. Well, we're going to go through this 6 weeks course, and then we're all going to jump into baptistry. No, it's a bigger commitment than that.
Yeah, excellently said. Thank you, Bob, for helping us with this.
Thank you, Bryce.
Well, you who are listening to this, it might be that in the past, you've not even thought about the possibility of people in your church who say they are believers not being believers. Or maybe on the other hand, you're a skeptic and you look around and assume that lots of people are not believers in the church. Whatever the case might have been in the past, may God help us all now to think this way.